My name is Dionysios, and I will talk about the system that we built to process large amounts of logs generated in these big data centers. This is work that we did with Kevin Webb and Ken Yergo, my advisor at UCSD, and also with Chris Tracer, who is now at Salesforce. So, many of these big internet services like search engines, social networks, run today in these very big data centers with thousands of servers that continuously generate large amounts of logs with valuable information. And with the emergence of data-intensive computing systems like MapReduce, people have now the opportunity to store these large amounts of logs and actually extract, do all sorts of intelligent analysis on this and get valuable information out of them. And examples of such log analytics would be, for instance, analyzing click logs from web servers to do advertisement targeting or content personalization, or processing social media feeds to do brand monitoring, or even processing the system logs from these data centers to detect anomalies and keep them running or do debugging. And so the common approach to do this log analytics today is basically to migrate all these logs from the servers where they are generated to clusters dedicated for running this MapReduce-like systems like MapReduce to do the analysis. Now, this is called the store first, query later approach. Now, this approach has certain limitations. First, it's the scale of the data. So, Facebook, for instance, reported that they collect more than 100 terabytes of logs per day, and trying to migrate this large data to these clusters puts a lot of stress on the network and the disks. Okay. Now, second, in these large data centers, there are going to be failures. So, for instance, servers might be unreachable, so log data become unavailable, right? And current systems follow one of the two approaches in this case. They either delay the analysis until they get all the data, or they process incomplete data. So this affects the accuracy of your analysis, and users don't really know, if data are missing at all, or what the impact is. And third, as a result of the above two problems, migrating these logs might actually take a lot of time. So this hinders real-time applications like ad targeting or fraud detection, where analyzing the data in a timely manner is very important. So in order to address these challenges, we built the in-situ MapReduce system, or IMR. And the idea about IMR is that we're going to move the analysis from these dedicated clusters on the log servers themselves to avoid this expensive data migration. And now, because we're going to maintain this MapReduce interface, which is flexible for writing applications, but because log data are continuous, we're going to adapt it to handle continuous data. And also, to deal with failures in the data centers, we're going to allow users to trade the fidelity of their accuracy, the fidelity of their analysis, that is the accuracy, for processing latency. Okay. Now, this system is basically motivated by the fact that many workloads are either highly selective, which means that we end up throwing most of the data away, either by filtering or summarizing, and they often are basically update-driven. That is, we need to sort of update our analysis in an online fashion as the data are generated. For instance, if we want to do ad targeting based on the most recent clicks that we see. Now, the system is basically not meant to replace a system like MapReduce, but rather complement it. It's like a tool that we want to use for those extract, transform, load jobs that basically take the data from the log servers, prepare them to load them into these clusters for follow-on analysis. So let's see how we actually process data with IMR. Now, in fact, one of our goals was to actually maintain this MapReduce API. Okay, so when users write programs, they basically specify this map function, which takes input log entries and generates output, generates key value pairs, which a map function is basically used for to extract useful information from logs and even filter data. They also specify this reduce function, which is used to aggregate the data that map outputs by reducing values that share the same key. And they may also specify a combine function, which is basically used by the system to provide partial aggregates from the map output in order to reduce the data size, which is useful because this, the map output is usually shipped across the network. So this is the shuffle phase that you that was mentioned in the previous talks. So unlike MapReduce, where which basically takes some input and produces a result, here, because logs are continuously generated, IMR and IMR program is also going to be continuously providing results to the user. Okay, so an input to an IMR program is basically an unbounded stream of log entries. So we need a way to bound how much data we compute every time. Okay, now the picture to the right shows basically how a single processing node processes data. So in order to bound computation, we're going to use a well-known concept from a stream processing systems, that of sliding windows. A sliding window, users are basically going to annotate their queries with a sliding window specification. So they specify first the range of the data, that is how much data to process every time. For instance, it could be something like, let's process user clicks over the last 60 seconds. Okay, and what happens is that every processing node basically consumes records in that window, maps them, log entries, maps them, combines them to generate this partial aggregate, and then sends them to this reducer that reduces the data and produces the final result. The users also annotate the query with an update frequency, which basically specifies how frequently to slide this window and update the analysis with new log entries. For instance, here we're doing this every 15 seconds. So as a result, these nodes basically produce an output result for every such window. Okay, so this simple extension to the model basically gives us a convenient way to update our analysis with new data periodically. Okay. Now this picture shows how the processing happens on a single node. Now in practice, we're going to put such processing nodes basically on every server in our system, right? And in order to do this window processing more efficiently, we're going to actually build aggregation trees where every processing node processes a window, and then the result of these partial aggregates are basically combined inside the network using the combined function that I mentioned before to further reduce how much data goes outside the servers. So this reduces traffic and also distributes the processing load. However, you know, if we actually look at how one of these nodes processes the data, there's a problem. Basically, every time we slide the window, we see that there's going to be some overlapping data between two windows. Now, what this means is that a processing node processes this data twice or multiple times, basically once for each time for each window they belong to. This also means that after it processes a window, it sends basically this duplicate data again to the network, right? So we waste a lot of CPU by doing this, and we also waste a lot of network resources. Okay, so in order so basically we want to eliminate this redundant work and redundant data that we send across the network, and we're going to do this by using the concept of panes. So panes are basically non-overlapping sub windows of the original window. So we're going to divide the window into panes. Now every processing node is going to process each such pane only once. Okay, for every such pane, again it generates a partial value that it sends to the reducer, and using again the familiar combined interface, this node can merge partial panes and generate the final output. So this basically gives us a way to save a lot of CPU and save a lot of network resources, and also, you know, finish the analysis faster. Now, since we're going to be running all these processing nodes inside on the servers, you know, there are going to be many of them, it's going to be very likely that, you know, servers might fail, or because, you know, they're going to run other services on them also, they might get overloaded. And because applications may actually have latency requirements, requiring, you know, these processing windows to finish within a maximum amount of time, it may be unavoidable to lose some data. For instance, assume that, you know, one of our processing nodes fails. What this means is that the query now produces some output, and we don't really know how this failure impacts the analysis. We don't know if data is missing. We don't know, you know, if how it's affected. So the challenge we face here is how to characterize in a systematic way these incomplete results, and also how to allow the users to trade the fidelity, the accuracy of their analysis for latency. And to do this, we're going to leverage the fact that data logs are naturally distributed across space, that is across the server nodes, and also across time, that is across a processing window. Okay? So we're going to use, again, panes, because they do exactly this. They describe this temporal and spatial nature of the data. So IMR introduces this C-square metric, which basically annotates results, annotates every output window with a scoreboard. A scoreboard basically tells the user which panes were successfully received by the system, and successfully processed by the system. Okay. So now users can basically use this C-square metric to trade fidelity for latency. So how do we do this? Now, users may specify that they some maximum latency requirement about their analysis. For instance, that they want processing windows to windows to be processed within 60 seconds. And they may also specify a minimum fidelity bound. For instance, that they want at least 50% of the data from the logs to be processed. Now, the two pictures, the two scoreboards at the right show that there are many different ways in which a system can process 50% of the data, right? And users can actually specify which of the two they want. But the thing here is that these two different ways might affect the analysis and the latency of the analysis, the accuracy and the latency of the analysis in different ways. So how should users, you know, choose what kind of specification, the kind of specification for their application? We have identified four useful classes of such C-square specifications that are useful for a wide range of applications. So the first one lets users, the first one is suitable for applications where latency is important and they want to minimize the analysis time. So here, users may specify a fidelity as a percentage of data. For instance, that they want 50% of the data, and let the system basically meet this requirement in the fastest way. So this gives the most freedom to the system to decrease the latency by processing the earliest data available. For instance, the data that are from the fastest servers. Now, this kind of specification is useful for processing logs that are uniformly distributed across the servers and across the time window. And this is because by requiring the system to process any 50% from the log data can still accurately summarize log event frequencies. Okay? But this might not always be the case. Data might not always be uniformly distributed across the machines or time. So in this case, users may still specify this minimum fidelity of 50%, but now they may require that this data is actually randomly sampled across time and space. Okay, so this gives to the system less freedom to decrease the latency because it cannot simply process, you know, the first available data, but makes this specification appropriate for non-uniform data, since with this random sampling we can still reproduce the relative occurrence of log events. In many cases, users are going to have some knowledge about how data is distributed, and these last two C-square specifications are basically useful for these cases. In the first one, users may specify that they want temporally complete data. That is, a node may process either all the data in the window or no data at all. So this kind of specification is useful for events that are local to a node. For instance, we may be counting how many times an event happened on a per-node basis. So this means that if we get this data from the nodes, we know that these event counts are going to be 100% accurate. But we may still miss events from other nodes. And the last one is symmetrical to this. In this case, applications may specify that they want spatially complete data. That is, for every pane that they receive, they basically every pane includes data from every processing node. And this kind of specification is useful when correlating events across servers. For instance, we have used this for a click sessionization application. Now, we have actually built all this into a prototype, which is basically based on a prior system that we built, Mortar, a distributed stream processor, which among others supports this sliding window abstraction and also supports this in-network aggregation trees. And we extended the system to first support this MapReduce API, support pane-based processing, and also support fault tolerance mechanisms that I haven't talked about, which involve either restarting operators when failures happen or doing adaptive data routing again when nodes fail. So one of the ways we have to extend the Mortar is also how to make it run actually side by side with real services. So the problem that we face here is that by collocating IMR with services, we know that CPU might be limited for the log analysis, just because it's taken up by these client-facing services. So our goal is to use this whatever resources IMR has in an intelligent way. Okay, and this means that this means that we don't really have enough resources to complete our analysis on time. So to deal with this, we implement this load shedding mechanism inside Mortar that basically monitor local processing rates for every node and then shed processing load when they detect that not all data can be processed in time. So this lets the system do more useful work that can actually be processed within the latency requirements. So as a result, this increases a lot the result fidelity when there are time and resource constraints. So I'm going to continue with part of our evaluation of the system. In the paper, there's an evaluation of how the system scales with larger data. Here, I'm going to talk about how we evaluated the usefulness of this C-square metric, how it helps us understand actually incomplete results, and how it helps us to trade the fidelity of our analysis with for latency. We did this with two applications. We used clickstream sessionization. Here I'm going to mention an application that we built to do anomaly detection in the Hadoop distributed file system. And we also evaluated our system when it's actually running in situ, when it's actually running with side by side with real applications. And here we want to see how we improve the fidelity of the analysis with these load shedding mechanisms and whether it impacts the performance of the services that it's running next to. So, in our first experiment, we wanted to explore this fidelity trade, latency trade-off. And we built an application that detects anomalies in HDFS using a published algorithm, which what it does is that it basically computes the distributions of how much time it takes for an HDFS server to serve client requests. And the algorithm uses these distributions to detect outliers among the HDFS servers. And the data we use here is a trace from a 30-node cluster that was running the HDFS service. So what we want to do here is to see how losing data affects the accuracy of our distribution, and do this for the different C-square specifications. So in this experiment, we're going to measure the accuracy of our analysis by basically using a statistical test that tells us the probability that the distribution that we computed is the same as the ideal one, that is the distribution when there is no data loss. Okay. Now, in the top graph at the right, on the x-axis, we're going to vary the percentage of the log data that are included in the analysis. Okay. This also shows how much data we lost. And on the y-axis, we're going to plot the accuracy of the analysis, again, the probability that I mentioned before. So here, the lower the probability, the better the accuracy is. So what we see here is when users specify that they want this temporally complete data, basically they get back results that are 100% accurate. And the reason for this is that we compute these distributions on a per node, on a per server basis. So this means that if a node, if server returns results, they're going to be perfectly accurate. But we may still miss data from other nodes. Okay? And if we look at the other C-square specification, we basically see that if they lose more than 80%, more than 20% of the data, then they actually return very poor quality results. But if we look at the bottom graph, where we plot the latency of the analysis, how much time it took, we see that we can actually use the other two C-square specifications, random sampling or spatial completeness, to decrease the latency. So here we see that after this, at this 80% threshold, basically these two specifications reduce the latency by more than 25%. So what we see here is that, you know, we can use C-square either to get results of good quality, or trade this quality for better latency. So in our last experiment, we wanted to see how IMR performs when it actually runs with real services side by side. So what we did is we ran IMR side by side with Hadoop on a 10-node cluster. So what we did is we kept the Hadoop system busy by continuously submitting jobs to it, and then we ran an IMR query that essentially implements a word count and has a latency requirement of 60 seconds. So every processing window has to be reported within that time bound. And what we do here is we want to see how effective is our load shedding mechanism in improving fidelity when it's running with real services, and also how we impact the performance of the Hadoop service. So on the top graph, on the x-axis, we are going to vary how much CPU we allocate to IMR by changing the niceness value. So the higher the niceness value the higher the niceness value is, the lower CPU, the less CPU we allocate to IMR. Okay? And on the y-axis, we're going to plot the fidelity of the return results. So what we see is that on the leftmost part of the graph, when niceness is zero and Hadoop and IMR get the same amount of CPU allocated, the quality of the result is very high. Instead, as we allocate less CPU to IMR, we see that if we don't do any of this load shedding, then IMR returns very poor results. Whereas by enabling our shedding mechanism, we basically can improve this fidelity by about 560% and even more than that in some cases. And at the same time, at the lower graph, where we plot how much the performance of Hadoop changes in terms of jobs completed per time, we see that we pay this, the cost for getting this improvement in fidelity is basically less than 11% degradation in the performance of Hadoop. So what this means is that we basically can run IMR side by side with this service without impacting it a lot and still getting very good results. So to conclude, we basically, the problem we're dealing with here is getting all these logs, trying to avoid transferring all these big logs to these dedicated clusters and process them in place in order to avoid, you know, large data transfers. So for this, we built this in-situ architecture that processes the logs at the sources, extends the MapReduce model for continuous data. It also provides a model that allows us to process incomplete data when failures happen, and provides metrics, a metric for users to understand how failures and data loss in general impacts the analysis, and also allows them to grade the accuracy of the analysis for the latency. And we also showed how using this load shedding mechanisms can improve the fidelity of the accuracy of the analysis when IMR is actually running with side by side with real services.
Praveen Yalgandula, HP Labs. So you said the in-network aggregation, that in-network aggregation is also running on the same nodes.
Yes.
And do you do any load shedding for the in-network processing then?
Yes, we do. Okay, so there's there are various so there are various issues with doing the network aggregation on the loads on the servers themselves. By trying to aggregate not only data, trying to process not only data from the server itself, but also data coming from
right.
From
so if you lose that data, that's you're losing data from a large number of nodes, right? It's not the data for just that node.
That's possible. Yeah.
So what do you do?
So right now we don't do anything smart about this, other than informing the user about how that impacted the analysis. We do have some mechanisms that basically it's basically a feedback mechanism that lets nodes interior nodes internal nodes sort of notify the leaves down the tree about whether they can sort of keep sending new data if the internal nodes have enough resources or not. But in case an internal node decides that they have to shed data and they already have received them from the leaves, then we're
okay.
Jason Dai from Intel. I like the idea, but I do see one potential problem is that if the service is hotter, so you have more log, less processing cycles. So essentially, you mean you will process the logs from the hot service less frequently than the cold service.
So this might be true, and I guess this is one thing that we wanted to actually investigate, how whether so the way we deal with this load is by shedding load, right? And the potential problem is this, that you might actually shed a lot of useful information, right? Because it's going to come from the busy servers. So that's still something that we need to basically investigate, how much this affects the accuracy of the results, and whether there are other, let's say, load shedding mechanisms that are more suitable for these scenarios. So.
Okay, let's thank the speaker again.